This podcast is presented by NXAI, your partner for time series foundation models and physical AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Rolf Weber. I'm recording in the rain. And I send my greetings to Munich to
Peter Seeberg. Good morning, Robert. On the road again, you busy bee.
On the road again. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sitting here, I think, 50 kilometers from Cologne. So it's a good place to record. I'm charging my car. And now I have time to discuss the latest and greatest when it comes to industrial AI with you.
Okay, let's do that. Why don't you start?
I have some big news. But before, do you remember what I did 2.5 years ago?
I can assume. I don't know. I have a feeling that I know what you're pointing at. But maybe before I make just a stupid, weird mistake, you tell me.
I wrote an email to a guy called Frank Hutter.
I was thinking of Frank. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he was 2.5 years. He was a professor in University of Freiburg. And I wrote him an email and said, hey, Mr. Hutter, I read your paper about this stuff called TAP-PFN. Sounds very interesting for me. I'm not familiar with tabular data, but maybe it's interesting for all our listeners in the industrial space. Then we record an episode with Frank. Then we invited Frank and his team, do you remember, to our event AI in the Forest.
That was at Aarberg, right?
Yeah, it was at Aarberg. Greetings to the Aarberg guys. Greetings to Werner. And there he got some feedback about his idea, its approach, and got some real use case feedback. And our listeners there were very impressed by the presentation by Frank. And now he sold the company to SAP. So that's the deal, right? That's interesting.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I must really underline that our listeners really get the latest and greatest shit when it comes to industrial AI first. So really, because I have a second example. Maybe your comment first on that.
Well, yeah. Well, as you say, I do recall. Very, very good. And in the meantime is what you didn't say. In the meantime, they then established this company, I think the three of them, right? Not all of the guys. I do recall Frank and one of his right-hand guys who was now part of the three people who did actually start the company. But there were a couple of other guys. There were a couple of students there as well.
Exactly.
And it was all very interesting. And the big, very interesting thing was, I believe, that if we talk about what it is that they do, you know, they talk about tabular data is their business, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that is not like a new thing, but typically the first thing most of us in an industrial space always look at when we are on the factory floor, we always look at the time series data, which, for example, Tyrex does, and we'd look at later on as well. And maybe they overlap. You know that better than I these days, I believe.
There's an overlap, but I think Frank and his team are really focused on tabular data and they building foundation models when it comes to tabular data. Yeah,
exactly. And then again, if we look in an industrial environment, for example, you know, and I talk about a little bit later on about test data, that's what we in an industrial environment do exactly the same as well. Maybe stronger even in the engineering phase at the beginning or when we do tests. And we have, for example, all this time series data. We put them in a database. We put them in an Excel or whatever kind of. That's basically what tabular data is. X, Y columns, right? And the data in it. And that was, for me, it was at least relatively new as a topic. And then they did the company. And then exactly what did they do now? They sold it to SAP, right?
To SAP, right? Yeah, SAP, because SAP is a tabular company, right?
Yes.
So,
tabular,
and so it's a fit, I think. Absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. Huge number, we see, 1 billion.
Invest, not the price for the company.
That's okay, yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah, I hear. I think we talked about it privately at some point, and I think you suggested, yeah. I mean, and that's exactly the way that Frank wrote it as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's an invest over of 1 billion over a certain time in into what the guys have been doing. Yeah. So yeah, amazing. Congratulations.
Congrats
to the guys. And as you say, you know, stay close to us. Come to our Alps or any other, you know, in between year conferences that we do. And you're going to learn everything about what is happening in the future.
Exactly. And now the second topic, right? So the same approach. I got introduced to Johannes Brandstetter 2 years ago by Sepp Hochreiter. He told me there's a guy coming from Amsterdam, from Microsoft, coming back to JKU Linz. He will be a professor here at JKU Linz. We will build a company called NXAI. Then we did an interview with Johannes. Then we invited Johannes to the Alps and with his topic AI for simulation. There he met the SimCon guys when it comes to injection molding simulation. Last week there was a huge announcement of SimCon working together with EMI. And this week we got the announcement that EMI, it's a spin-off of NXAI, is acquired by Mistral. So huge topic, right? Congratulations to Johannes and the team. I'm very, very happy and a little bit proud to be part of this journey a bit. So again, if you want to get the first shit when it comes to industrial AI, listen to the Industrial AI podcast. We were really, Johannes was very famous in the whole research area, I think. Everybody knew him. But I think in the industrial sector, nobody was so much familiar with him.
Well, he was... I mean, Frank, he was at some point in time, he was part of Google.
Yeah.
While Johannes was in the Microsoft space.
Exactly.
And he was in the weather forecasting space, right?
Exactly. The big Aurora model.
And I do recall that as long as I've been following him, he was still every now and then reporting what the people that he had left. I mean, he had co-founded that team, I believe. And he was so excited about... and I think that's what Sepp has been talking about all the time as well, the capabilities of the models, you know, looking into the future. So weather, air, fluid, it's all about physics simulation, I guess. That is, I guess, the overlap. And as you say, maybe if he came from weather, moving into more the industrial use of physics, I guess, right? And then he founded, so if we do the comparison then to Frank with his team, three people, that's exactly what they did, three of them as well, or not, I guess?
No, it was Sepp, Johannes, and Albert. They had the idea to found NXAI, then they run NXAI, then they recognized, oh, we need to spin off EMI. Then they spin off EMI. EMI raised 50 million euros, I think, last year, and now they got acquired by Mistral.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing story. So, well, then tell me which is going to be the next one.
Probably. I don't know. I don't. Let's see. Do you have do you want to bet on some companies?
You're not allowed to say. If you're not going to be right, we're going to have legal problems here.
Absolutely. But you need to listen to the podcast if you want to get the hottest shit when it comes to industrial AI. Really?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So what else do you have?
Yeah, we're just going to talk about things now. And then, you know, you listen and we're going to see what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Let's see. I think today, also from my side, the news topics are about money, deals, but also the role of humans. So the big thing, very similar, I think, is to what I see is that OpenAI, they launched a deployment company, Anthropic, does something similar, right, for AI native enterprise services company. And I must say, this sounds almost like similar, not completely. I think the two ones that we talked about are they sound more like technology buy, right? In this case, they are not technology buys. They are human, you know, buying humans. And that's maybe, I thought, is very similar to what we learned AWS doing, you know, what they have, their industrial fund. And it all sounds about, in this case, not only building the AI, large language models. I think if we're going to be talking about large language models in the end, I don't know. I think I'm going to always talk about assistance or whatever. It doesn't matter. Building the technology. And now they realize that not only, okay, we provide you services companies out there in the world with the technology. Now they say, you know, we are going to build companies. Maybe we buy them. That's what I assume. We're going to buy companies. We're going to buy the humans that are very capable of using the AI. And we then, as companies, are going to provide these services to the market, which I think is a very interesting development.
Okay, that's interesting. It sounds a little bit like they are building some AI integrators for their technology, or am I wrong?
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know what that means. As always, you know, for you, dear listeners, who, depending on what it is that you do, what you are thinking of doing, maybe today you are exactly that in an industrial environment. Maybe you are the industrial integrator that has put an AI layer on top, or you reinvented your company and you put AI at the bottom and the rest of the organization on top of it. Then you are today exactly what OpenAI and Anthropic and AWS, and I'm sure many others to follow, want to do as well. That means that you are in the same business as they are. So you're going to have now new competition soon, or, you know, maybe you're going to get a phone call from them, one of these.
Exactly. Maybe somebody is getting a phone call. Yeah. What else do you have, Peter?
Second is price differentiation. I thought very interesting. I'm not into the details of the models. You are very much closer, so you can confirm this or not. I see, as an example, Claude Sonnet becoming 9 times more expensive, GPT-5-4, 18 times more expensive. And so whoever the person is, I don't have it here, looking at this, says like the cost spread is like 60x. So what we see is, I think the word is bifurcating, so splitting into two extremes, right? So on one hand is the commodity models. Again, I hear, because I'm not using all these models, that is not the thing that I do, but I hear about DeepSeek and Qwen, and some of them maybe you almost get for free these days. And on the other hand, maybe call it the frontier models becoming premium infrastructure. Now, in the past, we have talked about what model are we going to be using? We as humans, we as consumers, each of us consumers, I'm completely convinced, you know, we're going to have our, what I always call, you know, our personal assistant. I don't think consumers are going to be calling it AI, but it doesn't matter. Personal assistants, and the same as business assistants. That's what they are going to be for me until I change my view. And then compare it a lot to buying a car. You know, is that the right thing? Maybe you can say buy something else, buy a chair, but maybe the value of what it is going to be, is it a car, or I don't know, maybe it could be. And then today it's very similar. There's a premium car, there's an entry-level car. You just said you are loading your electric gear, battery, gas prices. So there's so many ways of looking and deciding what is your available budget. Now, I think while all different types of cars, you know, do the job of moving you from A to B, and there's all these differentiations, my guess is that maybe with regards to LLMs, I say personal or business assistant, choosing what is going to be best for each of us, personally or business, is going to be by answering, does it do the task at hand? So if the consumer just wants to know, you know, how the weather is going to be next week in, I don't know, Southern Europe, because, you know, he or she is considering a private trip there, you know, just telling how the weather is going to be and then going there and the weather is like that, that's going to be wonderful. You know, going back to Johannes, for example, right? If you're going to have a very complex engineering and in the background you have the smartest LLM, business assistant, and it's going to be really expensive, it's going to cost you a couple of hundred, it's going to cost you a couple of thousand dollars within maybe a day, maybe that's perfectly okay, right? So I think the comparison that I saw somewhere, and it's, you know, maybe you want to rather pay 2 days an expensive consultant that does the job rather than a lower rate for 5 days that does not. So that's what I see happening in that market. Now, you are very close to at least the technology there. Is that something that you see happening there as well? How do you see the differentiation for our listeners happening?
Yeah, in the moment, what I see in the market is that, for example, the software guys at NXAI are only using Claude, right? So Anthropic is the must-have, and they're always reaching the token limits, and the credit cards are burning. And so, yeah, we see that, and there will be price discussions, and we will see frontier models. But they are building, like you mentioned, Qwen. Qwen, I think, is a good approach, but it's not like a common, right? So it's more common to use Anthropic or to ChatGPT for the consumers. And I think we will see two different. We will see specialized models when it comes to Qwen, or highly individual trained models when it comes to Qwen. Open source topics. I know that BMW is using a lot of DeepSeek stuff, I think. So let's see. Yeah. What else do you have, Peter? I'm a bit in a hurry. I need to go to the customer.
Sure. Yeah. I jump two or three, just one or two small pieces. Oh, yeah. I mean, talking about Claude Court, 98% of Claude Court is not AI. 512,000 lines of that. And I was perfectly happy with that, because what they talk about is a deterministic harness. So they say 98% of these 512,000 lines they looked at is deterministic, and only 2%, 1.6% they call AI. Now that's a weird, that's an amazing 98%. I would have thought maybe 80, but I'm perfectly happy with that. If it's only the 2%, the smart thing that is changing the world today, I'm so happy with that. Specifically, in the industrial environment, you're putting pressure on me here, that we put it in this deterministic harness, because that's exactly what we need. So I'm perfectly happy with that.
Perfect. Interesting. And your last news, Testator.
Test?
You said something with Testator you have.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not going to do that because I need more time for that. I'm just going to tell, and then we're going to be talking to Boris. Boris Scheringer has his book coming out, right?
Oh, wow.
And you and I are going to be talking to Boris, and it's his industrial AI from pilot to profit. And we're going to be talking to Boris and learn from him what is inside of him, his book.
We will have a dinner with Boris this week, I think, right?
Exactly. The time that this comes out, we have had our dinner actually already with him.
Yeah, hopefully we got the signed copy there. Yeah,
exactly.
Some pressure on Boris. Peter, let's move to the main part. Testator next time, because I'm in a hurry.
Yeah, perfectly fine.
In the main part, Davey is waiting in the main part. And maybe you remember we had a discussion about AI APIs, right?
Yep.
I think two episodes.
Exactly.
And yes. Davey sent a comment on your LinkedIn post, and then we had a small discussion. And then I said, Davey, do not discuss it here on LinkedIn. Come to the podcast and tell us what I missed. And we did it, and I think it's a very interesting episode from an industrial user perspective when it comes to AI APIs. Very interesting. Thanks a lot. Greetings to Belgium. It was a pleasure.
Looking forward to listening. Thank you, Robert. Have a great time in Cologne, and see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye. My guest today is Davey De Meijer from Belgium. Davey, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Robert.
Introduce yourself briefly to the listeners. What are you doing in the moment?
Yeah, okay. So I've been working in the industrial automation space for about 20 years. So I started as automation engineer, and I worked for 20 years with Actemium. You maybe also know them.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, because they're one of the biggest system integrators. And the last 12 years with Actemium, I spent in China. So I was based in Shanghai. I had a local team of Chinese automation engineers, some software engineers. And we supported multinationals setting up greenfields, mostly greenfields in China. So pharmaceuticals, food, and fine chemicals.
So traditional process industry.
Yeah. And I came back to Belgium and also left Actemium 2 years ago to set up my own company, which is called Accelere. So the name of the company is Accelere, and the target is to accelerate engineering, more specific, accelerate industrial process automation engineering.
That's interesting. We will talk later a bit about your company and your approach. But first of all, you listened to our latest episode and didn't want to let my criticism of APIs stand. We exchanged messages on LinkedIn, and then we decided let's record an episode on the whole topic. Maybe for all the listeners, maybe I do a little recap. I was at Hannover Messe, and with many of the companies I spoke to, the topic always came up. We have an API, so the customers can do now, and we have an API, and the customers can do now do AI. And for me, that wasn't enough for me, and I don't see any business value in this only to provide an API. And then this was your take. What do you think? What you said, API is a good approach for the first step, or am I wrong?
Yeah, so I said my eyebrows were raised a little bit. And Jens, I also said actually there's two ways of looking at APIs. One is actually the APIs going towards the models. And then the other one is the APIs going towards the industrial applications that we actually want to apply the AI to. So it was not entirely clear. Of course, I was also half listening to the podcast, but it was not entirely clear to me what you were talking about.
So my point was that I see there's an API, and then the guys are telling me, oh no, we have here API for, I don't know, language model 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you can now do AI with it. And this was not enough for me. Do we have a creativity lack in the industrial sector when it comes to APIs to the model?
Okay, so for the APIs to the model, I think the APIs to the models are starting to represent intelligence. So I think you can compare it a bit like you're taking electricity, or in an industrial plant, you need compressed air. It's becoming a basic utility. So in essence, you need access to this. So you need to somewhere get this intelligence. Either you take it from one of the main providers, from Anthropic, from OpenAI, or you consider to run it yourself, either still on a private cloud or maybe even locally with one of the open models. But you need these access to the models.
But this is not a business model for the companies, or am I wrong? Because this will be common API at the end.
Yeah, so of course, if you want to play that game, you need to invest billions. And it's not just a couple of billions, we're talking about hundreds of billions. So if you look at the investments of Anthropic and OpenAI, you see that the Chinese companies are trying to keep up.
No, I don't mean to build an own Anthropic or something like that, but I think the companies need to think about, can I add a value-added service to the API? Is there even more? Is there a business model for me not only to provide an API? What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, okay. But then maybe first we need to talk about the other kind of APIs. And the other kind of APIs is the APIs towards the industrial applications. And so what do we see now if we look at the world outside of industry? We see that the biggest part of AI being applied is going towards coding and engineering. And it's relatively easy to do this because in the world outside of the industrial space, everything is relatively open. So we have access to code, we have access to data, and for applications, we have open APIs. Today, it's very difficult to imagine applications in the software space that don't have an API that's commonly available. Now, if we look at the industrial space, it is actually very, very difficult to get access to code, to data, and to the APIs. So that was also the part that raised my eyebrows quite a bit, because in the industrial space, we already have trouble applying the main models because they almost don't have a grip on anything. And we need to take a step back, because if you look at the software world, you see that over time, software has been being built on top of software, on top of software. And you know the saying, people say, okay, software is eating the world. But we still don't see this in industry. Software is still not eating industry. And that's even before we start talking about AI. So it's very difficult to automate things in industry. If you look at industrial engineering, at the industrial engineering workflows, they are very, very manual. We say we're automation engineers. We automate the factories. We aim to make them autonomous. But if you look at our own workflows, our engineering workflows, they are almost not automated, and they're very difficult to automate. And the main reason that is like this is because we almost have no interface surface to do so. So that's one of my main concerns. If we start talking about applying AI to industry, we don't even have the basics yet.
Okay. So your opinion is that going this API is a good way to go, to have only to provide an API. It doesn't matter if you have a value-added service and you can sell the API. Is that what you think, that they can really sell APIs?
Okay. I think in many cases, you don't even need an API. So if we look at the basic thing that's running the factories, what is making sure that we can automate factories, that's PLCs, DCS systems. First of all, you don't need APIs for these. They need to have their code accessible. They need to move towards a more modern development workflow. And multiple companies are starting to do this. So Siemens, Beckhoff, B&R, Codesys, I believe Quell is also working on something. So these teams, they realize that that the future is there. So for accessing code, you don't need the API. You just need to have the capability to let your agent work directly on the codes. Then for everything else, yes, you need APIs. And then if you ask what is the business model, that's also a thing that's now under discussion in the software world. How do you charge for this? Classically, people would say, okay, we charge for per user. Well, we're talking then about the subscription model. We're still in the industrial world. We're still in a situation where most companies are trying to switch from perpetual to a subscription model. But we're already a step further in the software world, where people are saying the agents are starting to do so much work. How do you measure that? So you will need to figure out something that's more closer to the value that's being delivered. So it's going to be less seat-based subscriptions and more
value-based, no?
Usage, deliverables, and that will probably be different for every type of company, because it's depending on what you offer, it will be different.
Mm-hmm. And what about this creativity lack in the industry? Do you see that, or is it only my opinion on that?
Yes, I think industry is a bit a closed ecosystem, not looking enough outside of the bubble. It has also been for a very long time not so popular for young people to join. I feel now it's starting to change a bit. It's becoming a bit cooler again to join industry. Yeah, it's a bit a bubble. People think industry needs to do everything in a different way. While actually maybe it's 10 or 20% that we need to do in a specific way. But for the rest, the 80% that's left, we should actually look more to what's actually happening in the software industry, in the main AI applications, what people are doing there. So that's, yeah, I also think that's an issue.
Imagine you own an automation company like Beckhoff or like Rockwell or whatever. What would you offer to your customers when it comes to AI?
I think, first of all, I think these companies, their business model will change a lot, because you probably heard also about software-defined automation.
Yeah, we had an episode with the guys, yeah.
Yes, but software-defined automation is also a concept, and it's actually starting to work on two levels, and that's two income streams for the automation companies. One is the hardware. So the hardware is becoming commoditized. So that will have a big impact on the business model. I think many of the bigger companies also say, look, the hardware will become less important, but you need to get through this transition. And then the second thing is also the software. The basic software layer is also going through a commoditization step, which is normal. So in the software world, you also see that over time, as a certain layer becomes mature, that it becomes more a commodity, and then companies, they switch to higher levels of value. So if you look at Microsoft and Amazon, you see they always keep climbing the stack. So the automation companies also need to start doing that. And so I don't have the perfect answer. Of course, I'm also working on my own product, but I think they need to start shifting towards higher levels of value. And again, that's not so easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I also understand what position they are in. I think some of them are doing really cool things, but it's still early. But they will have no choice than to switch, because you can delay the commoditization for some time, but at a certain moment, you have to move.
And I think everybody is looking for the automation AI killer application, or am I wrong? And nobody found it yet.
You mean in the automation engineering?
Yeah.
So what is happening in the software world? Who is building the killer apps? You see, it's all open. It's all open agents. You see, you have Codex, you have Claude Code, but you also have Open Code. That's pretty good. So what is the similar thing in the software world? You see, Siemens has made a demonstration with one of the of these open agents on their new Symatic AX platform, and it works well. I know many people who just use regular Claude Code on Beckhoff or Siemens. It's a little bit a struggle because, again, this code is not always directly accessible, but basically it works. So I think the killer app will not just be on the pure coding, because that has already been solved. I think the killer app will be more a level higher. So I think companies need to look more into orchestration and how to manage all of that. Also, a coding agent by itself, it's difficult to control. If you can, with a pure coding agent, you can go from pure vibe coding to very thorough agentic coding. So if you don't pay attention, it's going to be too much vibe coding. So we will need to go to a situation where anything that's adjusted with agents goes through proper version control, goes through proper reviews, and goes through proper unit testing, something we are also lacking a lot in industrial automation. So I think the opportunity is more in this direction. And then especially coupled with the specific things that we have in the industrial automation world. I mean by that, we don't do agile coding. We have more a waterfall approach. We connect to other engineering disciplines, to electrical, to mechanical, to process. We have to go to the FATs, to the SATs. So, and that's what these main coding agents, they don't know all this kind of things. And that's the orchestration, or the whatever you want to call it, the project management tying in into the entire ecosystem. That's not going to come from outside of the industry. That's specific for us. So I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity there.
So making code generation industrial grade, is this the way to go?
Code generation industrial grade.
Yeah, make it reliable, deterministic approach, maybe call it deterministic. So is this the way to go for the automation companies?
So deterministic code generation, that's what my company is doing. So that's an alternative is complementary to agentic coding. So deterministic code generation means you use a template-based approach, and even if you delete the code and you regenerate, it's 100% the same. This is something that actually already has been done for multiple decades, but often in smaller teams. But you can also see this deterministic approach when you ask agents to do something for you. Imagine you ask Claude to do some data analysis. You will see that Claude is not going to do it just in his memory. He's going to write a Python script, most likely. And then this Python script will do all the analysis.
Mm-hmm. In your day-to-day work, what AI adoptions do you see among customers? What they are doing?
Oh, it's very early. And I see most customers, they're also starting to use the regular Claude Code, Copilot. Copilot is very common because it's relatively easy for companies. They're on Microsoft. They can open the subscriptions. And then individual people just try to figure things out. But I see that actually in the industrial space, I see that it's much less than in the software world.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see your business model going? Oh, maybe you can describe a little bit your business model. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, so again, it's focused on the process industry, so food, pharma, chemicals. And then the engineering workflow in this kind of industries, we start from a PID built by mechanical or process engineers. And based on the PID, we will not do the coding. We will first do a functional description, like a specification. And there's a standard, so in batch-based process automation, that's ISA 88. So the platform that we're building is allowing people to collaborate on this functional description. And so then based on that, we do the deterministic code generation. So where I see the future going is that the agents will be more towards the left, towards this functional design specification, helping with building that, and then humans can review it. Or they can also make adjustments. But it's much more easy to review a specification than code. Code is very hard to review, even if you're a software engineer. But functional descriptions are easy to review, and anybody can review it. So a process engineer or a operations engineer or even a smart operator, everybody can work together. So that's where I think it's going. And I also think you have three things working together. You have agents. You have humans, and then you have tooling, deterministic tooling. And so the opportunity is in this tooling to bring industry-specific workflows or calculations or things that need to be managed to this world. If you look, for example, at the DCS system, there's a lot of specific things in a DCS system. But currently, these systems can only be built by humans. They're totally inaccessible by agents. So the future DCS needs to figure out how do you combine this world that the agents can also collaborate on this.
That's coming back to the APIs. Where do you see good AI APIs adoptions? Can you name some players in the market where you really can say, oh, that makes sense, what they are offering with their API, what I can do, what the customer can do?
Industry or outside of industry?
Both worlds.
Inside of industry. So for the coding, I think I already mentioned them. So it's the newer generation of IDEs built by Siemens, or Semantic AX. It's back of PLC++, which will be released later this year. BNR, who has always been like this, and Codices. And I believe Rockwell is also working on something. Other than that, you now start seeing some applications providing MCPs. I believe Ignition is going that direction. I'm not sure if it's an official MCP. So that's a SCADA system. At the MES layer, I don't see too much yet. I see there's now a fully new open source MES that's quite popular. That's Carbon. I didn't check the details, but they're quite popular. This is not the API, but because they're open source, you can let your agents just take it and adjust it. And then outside of industry, that's actually, there's a lot of people discussing about this. For example, I think this week it was the owner of Box.com. So it's a content management. So he's also posting a lot on X. So all Twitter and on I think also on LinkedIn, or people share it on LinkedIn. And these companies still didn't figure out. They say what I said before. They say we need to go to, instead of a seat-based subscription, we need to go to more a consumption-based subscription. I think it's still very early. Companies are still trying to figure it out.
Okay, so everybody tries out some POCs here. So you don't see something that we really can say, wow, that's impressive, that runs in the real world.
Not immediately.
Okay. What is on your agenda for the next month when it comes to technology?
Yeah, so I'm very much busy with my company. So my agenda is mainly supporting the existing teams and onboarding new teams, or trying to get more teams on board. Also, my main thinking goes towards, on the one hand, how to make it easier to adopt the new workflows, and also how to prepare for AI in the future. Because you have to think, anything that we build today, if we will be 3 years further, AI agents will be so much more competent. And I think most people still don't realize what actually they can do. And the best way to figure it out is to just give them sometimes things. So really go into the vibe coding or the vibe engineering. So not on the real project, but let them do things and see how far you can push them. So it's actually becoming very crazy. So the question is, will these agents be able to run for a longer time by themselves? Because now you do have to give them tasks. You have to review their tasks. So how far are we from them being able to run for, let's say, almost a day? And then imagine how your product should look like. Then your product will, for a big part, be interfacing with agents. And I see a lot of people always say, yes, but you cannot trust agents. But you need to think, how do you structure your product that actually you have full traceability, and that you have the checks, and that at the necessary moments a human can come in to review and validate everything. So that's one thing that I'm working on a lot. If you ask me what I will do the next month, I also saw that I just got an invite from the AI Association. Did you see that one?
No.
Industrial AI Network?
No.
So I see it's Accenture, Fraunhofer, Siemens, Bosch.
Oh, okay. I know the guys, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's also very interesting. I don't know the details yet. I just saw some messages going up and down. But I think that something like this is needed, because so they do say, okay, we want to figure out what are the bottlenecks. And if basically what I have now been saying, that's a lot of the bottlenecks in the industrial automation layer. So we need to talk about these bottlenecks, and we need to figure out how to get past them.
Coming back to the automation companies, what would you like to see from them in the next months when it comes to APIs, AI, coding, agents? What would you like to see from them?
Maybe three things. So first of all, really make progress with this next generation of IDEs that are really focused on that actually decouple the code. So we can actually let the agents work directly on the code. Second of all, anything that cannot be managed directly by code, open up the APIs, as some products have APIs, but they are not documented. So document them. And then the third thing is we need to have a discussion about the standards, because we have a big problem with the standards.
Why we have a problem with the standards? Can you explain that? Why do we have a problem?
So a couple of the key standards in automation. So we have IEC 61131. You're aware of that. We have the ISA standards, ISA 88, ISA 95. And now we have a very new interesting standard, which is module type package, which will actually make it easier to connect skids and machines to higher level control systems. Really interesting for pharmaceuticals, chemicals. And so all these three standards, you are not allowed to share the documents and you are not allowed to put these documents into AIs. So if you go to the website of ISA, for example, the first thing you will see is a pop-up that says, if you put the standard into LLM, they will sue you. It's literally on the website. And this maybe worked before because you had to have humans anyway to implement the standards. But now we come to a world of agentic engineering. If the agents do not know the standard, they will not apply the standard. And then the engineers who have to apply the standard, if they have to choose between something that is known by the agent and something that's not known by the agent, they will choose the things that are known by the agent. So IEC 61131 is a very big issue. It's already very fragmented, and we still cannot teach the agents how to handle it. At the same time, I already know teams that are just starting to switch to things like Python. And of course, you can say, oh, wow, Python, oh no, deterministic and things like this. But these are teams that really know what they are doing. And they just say, we need to move faster. And it's of course, it's very, very small. But if automation companies want IEC 61131 to survive, they need to stand up and say, look, this is still the future of automation. But then open up the standard and start thinking about this.
So we will see new standards, or we will see a standard discussions?
I prefer standard discussions. I prefer not to bring new standards. Like module type package is a really nice standard. It's not so complex. We could propose, okay, let's make a new standard, but this doesn't help. It doesn't help to go to a new standard because we create fragmentation. So the best thing is that there's a discussion that people understand and say, okay, this standard, this documentation needs to be open so we can apply it to accelerate engineering, both with classical automation and with agentic engineering, but preferably on existing standards.
We are living in interesting times, in very interesting times. I really appreciated your feedback when it comes to the APIs via LinkedIn on our discussion. I keep my fingers crossed for you and your company. Thanks a lot and all the best to Belgium.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.